Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 895. The CIA and the, quote, privacy, unquote, advocates. Update on the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. This is being recorded on March 16th of the year 2016. Hi there, boys and girls. Guess what time it is? That's right. It's time for another exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie's not like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. Well, as long-time listeners will no doubt realize with my characterized introduction, we are going to carry on with an expanded examination, not only of Raphael Snowden, as I have put it, an intelligence operation, BND and CIA, I suspect. But we're going to take a look at some things that are going to impinge on various things, including the Apple, I call it ISIS phone case, and the other court cases having to do with encryption. We're going to see evidentiary tributaries running in the direction not only of the CIA, but the things in the past. We're going to see evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the ongoing destabilization, not only of the Obama administration, but of Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign as well. We're going to take up the admittedly very complex issue of encryption, something that is as cynical as it is complex in the future program or programs. Again, the Apple controversy is very interesting indeed, with people you might expect to be opposed to Apple's stance on encryption actually supporting them. And we're going to take a look at that at considerable length in the future with regard to intelligence services and encryption. As a general note, I do not have the tech background to make an objective evaluation of all of the arguments that have been presented vis-a-vis encryption. I simply don't have the technical expertise to rule on that past a point. However, I do know a little bit about the intelligence services, and I think we can take for granted something that is already pretty much on the public record, and that is that intelligence services will be on the cutting edge of the development of encryption technology. That is simply where an intelligence service would be, and they have certainly been there. Perhaps the best known encrypted internet communication service is the Tor network, spelled T-O-R, which was not only developed by elements of U.S. intelligence, but is apparently, for those in the know, so to speak, anything but secure. The issue of secure technology, and I would note that the Max Planck Institute in Germany is now developing a Tor-like network that is allegedly completely secure. It is an interesting debate, given that technology experts, security experts, have said that recent rulings by the Obama administration would make it tougher for law enforcement to break encryption and to hunt down bad guys, so to speak, but that intelligence services would be able to do that. Again, we'll be talking about the Apple case at a greater length and in greater detail. It is, again, multi-layered, very complex, completely cynical for Apple and the other tech companies in this area to pretend for 1 minute that they are concerned with human welfare is the ultimate pretense, and they are not concerned with human welfare or privacy in any size, shape, form, or manner. What they are concerned about is market share and money, and we'll talk about that when we cover the Apple case, which from all standpoints is frankly rotten to the core. It also has some very, very interesting implications going forward. What we're going to be looking at in this program, much of the show is going to consist of a long, complete reading of an article that I excerpted in, for the record, 891. How might Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty have viewed Edward Snowden? And specifically, we're going to be taking a look at an organization called the BBG, or the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which has evolved directly from the CIA's various radio propaganda and psychological warfare outfits. Were set up in the immediate aftermath of World War II and that have functioned during the Cold War. As the Cold War wound down, many of these functions were evolved, to coin the term, and although officially funded by Congress, they basically remain a creature of the CIA. Remember, the Broadcasting Board of Governors, or BBG, one of its major subsidiary elements is Radio Free Asia, RFA. In turn, Radio Free Asia has given rise to the Open Technology Fund, remember that, and also the Open Whisper Systems, remember that as well. Open Whisper being used to encrypt messaging on Facebook's WhatsApp app, it's WHATS, capital APP, is also a focal point of debate with regard to encryption. Now, again, it can be taken as axiomatic that intelligence services will be at the cutting edge of encryption, because that basically is what an intelligence service would do. Generally, when the Snowden affair first broke, I noted something I will remind people of again briefly. It should come as no surprise whatsoever to see NSA and other military agencies involved with the Internet. The Internet, formerly called the DARPANET, was developed by the U.S. military, and expecting the Pentagon not to be fundamentally involved with something like that, it's kind of like expecting the Wright brothers not to pilot aircraft. It simply is not a realistic consideration. However, Edward Snowden is something else again. In For the Record 891, I noted that when Snowden, who is a nasty, cynical, foul-mouthed fascist, the exact antithesis of the altruistic, heroic, self-sacrificing crusader that he is portrayed as being. Snowden was working for CIA in the summer of 2009 when, by his own account, the Angel of Mercy alighted on his shoulder and infused him with a spirit of beneficence toward his fellow human beings, and off he went, a latter-day high-tech Joan of Arc, intent on sacrificing himself for the benefit of all of us. In fact, Edward Snowden is a spy, and he is the opposite of what he has represented himself as being, and he is the opposite of what the dupes who have been promoting him represent themselves as being as well. We should note that what we're going to be looking at with the BBG and the OTF and the Open Whisper Systems and Radio Free Asia is an evolution of the basic psychological warfare and propaganda functions of the CIA's radio networks and other communications networks from the Cold War. Now, with the advent of the Internet, people in targeted countries, in particular some of the communist countries of Asia, have been seeking refuge from government surveillance of their activities and communications. It appears basically that what we are looking at with the BBGs, and I think we can effectively say CIA funding of these privacy networks, and perhaps privacy belongs in quotes, is a way of doing two things. One, an extension of the CIA / Radio Free Asia / BBG psychological warfare and propaganda outfits from the Cold War, permitting dissidents or perhaps covert operators and covert operators in targeted countries to communicate without their governments being able to penetrate their encrypted communications. At the same time, as is quite obvious from the Tor network, our government and our intelligence services, at the very least, are in fact penetrating the Tor network and monitoring communications there as well. So what we are looking at with the BBG and their funding of encryption technology is basically an extension of the functions of the CIA's Radio Free America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia, Radio Liberty functions during the Cold War, psychological warfare and propaganda. Now, the single greatest form of broadcasting is the Internet. It is, in fact, a form of broadcasting, casting information very broadly indeed. And with the growth of the Internet and with its use in targeted countries by either genuine dissidents and or covert operators of some kind or one kind or another, providing them with encryption on the one hand and also encryption that can be penetrated by elements of U.S. intel is something that these elements appear to be involved with. Before I get into the article about the BBG by Yasha Levine from Pando Daily, very quickly reviewing something that we looked at in For the Record 891 about the CIA's focal point functions. From the book JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Matters by James W. Douglas with two S's, Touchstone Books, softcover edition, copyright 2008. Now, in this, note how the CIA has penetrated the military and other agencies of the federal government and done so in a clandestine fashion, not apparently known to those agencies that have been penetrated. This would include CIA and the military, the White House, and others. One man in the position to watch the arms of the CIA proliferate was Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, Prouty. He ran the office that did the proliferating. In 1955, Air Force headquarters ordered Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty, a career Army and Air Force officer since World War II, to set up a Pentagon office to provide military support for the clandestine operations of the CIA. Thus, Prouty became director of the Pentagon's focal point office for the CIA. CIA Director Alan Dulles was its actual creator. In the 50s, Dulles needed military support for his covert campaigns to undermine opposing nations in the Cold War. Moreover, Dulles wanted subterranean secrecy and autonomy for his projects, even from the members of his own government. Prouty's job was to provide Pentagon support and deep cover for the CIA beneath the different branches of Washington's bureaucracy. These last two sentences again. Dulles wanted subterranean secrecy and autonomy for his projects, even from the members of his own government. Prouty's job was to provide Pentagon support and deep cover for the CIA beneath the different branches of Washington's bureaucracy. Dulles dictated the method Prouty was to follow. I don't want a focal point, Bella said. I want an office that's cleared to do what we have to have done. An office that knows us very, very well. And then an office that has access to a system in the Pentagon. But the system will not be aware of what initiated the request. They'll think it came from the Secretary of Defense. They won't realize it came from the Director of Central Intelligence. Dulles got Pratty to create a network of subordinate focal point offices in the armed services, then throughout the entire U.S. government. Each office that Pratty set up was under a cleared CIA employee. That person took orders directly from the CIA, but functioned under the cover of his particular office and branch of the government. Such, quote, breeding, unquote, Pratty said decades later in an interview, resulted in a web of covert CIA representatives in the State Department, in the FAA, in the Customs Service, in the Treasury, in the FBI, and all around through the government, up into the White House. Then we began to assign people there who those agencies were from the Defense Department. Who those people thought were from the Defense Department. Excuse me, I dropped the word. But they actually were people that we put there from the CIA. The consequences in the early 1960s when Kennedy became president was that the CIA had placed a secret team of its own employees through the entire U.S. government. It was accountable to no one except the CIA, headed by Allen Dulles. After Dulles was fired by Kennedy, the CIA's Deputy Director of Plans, Richard Helms, became this invisible government's immediate commander. No one except a tight inner circle of the CIA even knew of the existence of this top secret intelligence network, much less the identity of its deep cover bureaucrats. These CIA focal points, as Dulles called them, constituted a powerful, unseen government within the government. Its Dulles-appointed members would act quickly, with total obedience when called on by the CIA to assist its covert operations. And what we're going to be looking at now is, again, the CIA-derived nature of the so-called privacy activists. And these are the people that we might term Team Snowden or the Snowdenistas. They are also whom I call the Assange holes as well. The Snowden op and the WikiLeaks op are inextricably linked. We should also note, although it was not in that passage from JFK and the Unspeakable, the agency, CIA that is deeply involved with the news media and has been for a long time, the New York Times and Washington Post in particular, and it would be impossible to exaggerate their influence within the cultural life of this country, academia, and even the so-called progressive sector as well. Many of the best-known people within the so-called progressive sector, ranging from Eugene McCarthy, the anti-war candidate in 1968, to his manager, Albert Lowenstein, to Gloria Steinem, all had backgrounds in the CIA. There's a very good book called The Cultural Cold War by Francis Stoner, S-T-O-N-O-R, that will give you some background on that. And what I think we are looking at in no small measure, vis-a-vis Team Snowden, is the operations of an underground Reich CIA network that has evolved from the organizations like Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia, Radio Liberty, from the Cold War period. And I think just as we looked at with the assassination of JFK, ultimately the government tools and the government operatives that were originally tasked with operating against foreign countries have been tasked with operating against our government when it is not doing what this secret team, so to speak, wants it to do. There are certainly some, one of the elements of analysis that I presented in connection with the Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook was that the Obama administration is being destabilized, as is the NSA, as are the very tech companies that have rallied around the need for encryption following the, quote, disclosures of Edward Snowden. And I think that ultimately those industries have been targeted by the underground Reich, by Germany, by the Bormann Network. And it is certainly a matter of public record that far from being shocked at the disclosures of Edward Snowden, the BND and German intel, as well as other European agencies, want in. They want to do the same thing. And in the case of Germany, they want access to the Five Eyes spying network. They were anything but shocked.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
So as we look at Team Snowden, so to speak, remember that it is a milieu derived from the CIA, derived from CIA psychological warfare and propaganda outfits from the Cold War, evolved now into helping to secure internet communications for genuine dissidents and covert operators in targeted countries, while at the same time apparently allowing elements of U.S. intel to monitor those very same networks. I also wonder, I suspect that CIA itself is interested in masking its communications from other U.S. agencies, including NSA, so that they can do things like funding by continuing to use jihadists as proxy warriors, and also doing other things like staging provocations here in the U.S. and trafficking in narcotics and other things that elements of CIA have been known to do. Of the evolution, remember BBG, the Broadcasting Board of Governors, RFA, Radio Free Asia, Open Technology Fund, or OTF, and Open Whisper Systems. What I think we're looking at in part with Team Snowden is an underground Reich-connected CIA milieu that has been brought home, in a sense, and something that was to be used and is being used abroad is now being used against our own government because it does not do what the, quote, secret team, unquote, wants it to do. It is also a very effective psychological warfare tool against the American people, alienating young voters from the Obama administration and convincing them that it's hopeless and that they should stay home, as they did in the 2010 and in particular in the 2014 off-year elections, which gave the GOP control of the Senate. This article, Internet Privacy Funded by Spooks, A Brief History of the BBG by Yasha Levine of the Pando Daily, March 1st, of 2015. For the past few months, I've been covering U.S. government funding of popular internet privacy tools like Tor, CryptoCat, and Open Whisper systems. During my reporting, one agency in particular keeps popping up, an agency with one of those really bland names that masks its bizarre, wild history: the Broadcasting Board of Governors, or BBG. The BBG was formed in 1999 and runs on a $721 million annual budget. It reports directly to Secretary of State John Kerry and operates like a holding company for a host of Cold War-era CIA spinoffs and old-school psychological warfare projects like Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia, Radio Marti, Voice of America, Radio Liberation from Bolshevism, since renamed Radio Liberty, and a dozen other government-funded radio stations and media outlets pumping out pro-American propaganda across the globe. A quick parenthetical element, Radio Liberty was one of the agencies used to finance the funding of Alan Dulles' fascist Freedom Fighters program under the Crusade for Freedom, which led directly to the creation of the Nazi branch of the Republican Party. Continue. We looked at that in our last show, For the Record 894. Today, the congressionally funded federal agency is also one of the biggest backers of grassroots and open-source internet privacy technology. These investments started in 2012 when the BBG launched the Open Technology Fund, or OTF, an initiative housed within and run by Radio Free Asia, RFA, a premier BBG property that broadcasts into communist countries like North Korea, Vietnam, Laos, China, and Myanmar. The BBG endowed Radio Free Asia's Open Technology Fund with a multi-million-dollar budget and a single task, quote, to fulfill the U.S. congressional global mandate for Internet freedom, unquote. It's already a mouthful of proverbial Washington alphabet soup. Congress funds BBG to fund RFA, to fund OTF, but regardless of which subgroup ultimately writes the check, the important thing to understand is that all this federal government money flows directly or indirectly from the Broadcasting Board of Governors. Between 2012 and 2014, Radio Free Asia's Open Technology Fund poured more than $10 million into internet privacy projects, big and small, open source encrypted communication apps, next generation secure email initiatives, anti-censorship mesh networking platforms, encryption security audits, secure cloud hosting, a network of high-capacity Tor exit nodes, and even an anonymous Tor-based tool for leakers and whistleblowers that competed with WikiLeaks. Though many of the apps and tech backed by Radio Free Asia's OTF are unknown to the general public, they are highly respected and extremely popular among the anti-surveillance internet activist crowd. OTF-funded apps have been recommended by Edward Snowden, covered favorably by ProPublica and the New York Times technology reporters, and repeatedly promoted by the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Everyone seems to agree that OTF-funded privacy apps offer some of the best protection from government surveillance you can get. In fact, just about all the featured open-source apps on EFF's recent secure messaging scorecard were funded by OTF. Here's a small sample of what the Broadcasting Board of Governors funded through Radio Free Asia and then through the Open Technology Fund between 2012 and 2014. Open Whisper Systems, maker of free encrypted text and voice mobile apps like Text Secure and Signal Red Phone, got a generous $1.35 million infusion. Facebook recently started using Open Whisper Systems to secure its WhatsApp messages. CryptoCat, an encrypted chat app made by Nadim Kobesi, K-O-B-E-I-S-S-I, and promoted by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, received $184,000. Leap, L-E-A-P, in caps, an email and encryption startup, got just over $1 million. Leap is currently being used to run secure VPN services at riseup.net, the radical anarchist communication collective. I'm going to pause right there because this is a pattern one will find. The radical anarchist communication collective. Well, you start digging around there, and they may very well not know this. I can't speak for them, but it's a pretty good bet that they've got the CIA in their drawers, so to speak. Continuing. A WikiLeaks alternative called Global Leaks, which was endorsed by the folks at Tor, including Jacob Applebaum, received just under $350,000. The Guardian Project, which makes an encrypted chat app called Chat Secure, as well as a mobile version of Tor called Orbot, got $388,500. The Tor project received over $1 million from OTF to pay for security audits, traffic analysis tools, and set up fast Tor exit nodes in the Middle East and Southeast Asia. In 2014, Congress massively upped the BBG's Internet Freedom budget to $25 million, with half of that money flowing through RFA into the Open Technology Fund. This $12.75 million represented a threefold increase in OTF's budget from 2013, a considerable expansion for an outfit that was just a few years old. Clearly, it's doing something that the government likes. A lot. With those resources, the Open Technology Fund's mother agency, Radio Free Asia, parenthetically in effect CIA, plans to create a vertically integrated incubator for budding privacy technologists around the globe, providing everything from training and mentorship to offering them a secure global cloud hosting environment to run their apps, to legal assistance. Readers might find it odd that a U.S. government agency established as a way to launder the image of various shady propaganda outfits, more on that soon, is now keen to fund technologies designed to protect us from the U.S. government. Moreover, it might seem curious that its money would be so warmly welcomed by some of the Internet's fiercest anti-government activists. Parenthetically, no one familiar with intelligence methodology, and the CIA in particular, would believe anything else. But as folks in the open-source privacy community will tell you, funding for open-source encryption and anti-surveillance tech has been hard to come by. So they've welcomed money from Radio Free Asia's Open Technology Fund with open pockets. Developers and groups submitted their projects for funding, while libertarians and anti-government, anti-surveillance activists enthusiastically joined OTF's advisory council, sitting alongside representatives from Google and the U.S. State Department, tech lobbyists, and military consultants. But why is a federally funded CIA spinoff with decades of experience in psychological warfare suddenly blowing tens of millions in government funds on privacy tools meant to protect people from being surveilled by another arm of the very same government? Parenthetically, that's why I read the material about Prouty and the Focal Point Networks. I think that may be what we're looking at here. Continuing. To answer that question, we have to pull the camera back and examine how all of these Cold War propaganda outlets begat the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which begat Radio Free Asia, which begat the Open Technology Fund.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
The story begins in the late 1940s. The Broadcasting Board of Governors traces its beginnings to the early Cold War years as a covert propaganda project of the newly created CIA to wage psychological warfare against communist regimes and others deemed a threat to U.S. interests. George Kennan, the key architect of post-World War II foreign policy, pushed for expanding the role of covert peacetime programs. And so, in 1948, National Security Council Directive 10/2 officially authorized the CIA to engage in covert operations against the communist menace. Clause 5 of the directive defined covert operations as, quote, propaganda, economic warfare, preventive direct action including sabotage, anti-sabotage, demolition, and evacuation measures, subversion against hostile states, including assistance to underground resistance movements, guerrillas, and refugee liberation groups, and support of its indigenous anti-communist elements in threatened countries of the free world. Propaganda quickly became one of the key weapons in the CIA's covert operations arsenal. The agency established and funded radio stations, newspapers, magazines, historical societies, emigre research institutes, and cultural programs all over Europe. In many cases, it funneled money to outfits run and staffed by known World War II war criminals and Nazi collaborators, both in Europe and here in the U.S. Christopher Simpson, author of Blowback, America's Recruitment of Nazis and Its Destructive Impact on Our Domestic and Foreign Policy, details the extent of these psychological warfare projects. CIA-funded psychological warfare projects employing Eastern European emigres became major operations during the 1950s, consuming tens and even hundreds of millions of dollars. This included underwriting most of the French Paix et Liberté movement, paying the bills of the German League for struggle against inhumanity, and financing a half-dozen free jurists' associations, a variety of European federalist groups, the Congress for Cultural Freedom, magazines, news services, book publishers, and much more. These were very broad programs designed to influence world public opinion at virtually every level, from illiterate peasants in the fields to the most sophisticated scholars in prestigious universities. They drew on a wide range of resources, labor unions, advertising agencies, college professors, journalists, and student leaders, to name a few. In Europe, the CIA set up Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberation from Bolshevism, later renamed Radio Liberty, which beamed propaganda in several languages into the former Soviet Union and Soviet satellite states of Eastern Europe. The CIA later expanded its radio propaganda operations into Asia, targeting Communist China, North Korea, and Vietnam. The spy agency also funded several radio projects aimed at subverting leftist governments in Central and South America, including Radio Free Cuba and Radio Swan, which was run by the CIA and employed some of the same Cuban exiles that took part in the failed Bay of Pigs invasion. Even today, the CIA boasts that these early psychological warfare projects, quote, would become one of the longest-running and successful covert action campaigns ever mounted by the U.S., unquote. Officially, the CIA's direct role in this global psychological warfare project diminished in the 1970s after the spy agency's ties to Cold War propaganda arms like Radio Free Europe were exposed. Congress agreed to take over funding of these projects from the CIA, and eventually Washington expanded them into a massive, federally funded propaganda apparatus. The names of the various CIA spin-offs and nonprofits changed over the years, culminating in a 1999 reorganization under President Bill Clinton, which created the Broadcasting Board of Governors, a parent holding company to group new broadcasting operations around the world together with Cold War-era propaganda outfits with spooky pasts, including Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Voice of America, and Radio Free Asia. Today, the BBG has a $721 million budget provided by Congress. It reports to the Secretary of State and is managed by a revolving crew of neocons and military think tank experts. Among them, Kenneth Weinstein, head of the Hudson Institute, the arch conservative Cold War era military think tank, and Ryan C. Crocker, former ambassador to Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria. Although today's BBG is no longer covertly funded via the CIA's black budget, its role as a soft power psychological warfare operation hasn't really changed since its inception. The BBG and its subsidiaries still engage in propaganda warfare, subversion, and soft power projection against countries and foreign political movements deemed hostile to U.S. interests. And it is still deeply intertwined with the same military and CIA-connected intelligence organizations from USAID to DARPA to the National Endowment for Democracy. Today, the Broadcasting Board of Governors runs a propaganda network that blankets the entire globe. Radio Mahdi, aimed at Cuba, Radio Farda, aimed at Iran, Radio Sawa, SAWA, which broadcasts into Iraq, Lebanon, Libya, Morocco, and Sudan, Radio Azadi, targeting Afghanistan, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, which has tailored broadcasts in over a dozen languages into Russia, Ukraine, Serbia, Azerbaijan, Ukraine, Belarus, Georgia, and Armenia, and Radio Free Asia, which targets China, North Korea, Laos, and Vietnam. The BBG is also involved in the technology of post-Cold War Internet-era propaganda. It has bankrolled satellite Internet access in Iran and continues to fund an SMS-based social network in Cuba called Paramedio, which is different from the failed covert Twitter clone funded by USAID that tried to spark a Cuban Spring Revolution. It is contracted with an anonymity internet proxy called SafeWeb, which has been funded by the CIA's venture capital firm InQtel. It worked with tech outfits run by practitioners of the controversial Chinese right-wing cult Falun Gong, whose leader believes that humans are being corrupted by invading aliens from other planets and dimensions. These companies, DynaWeb and UltraReach, provide anti-censorship tools to Chinese internet users. As of 2012, the BBG continued to fund them to the tune of $1.5 million a year. As the BBG outlined in a 2013 fact sheet for its Internet Anti-Censorship Unit, the BBG collaborates with other Internet freedom projects and organizations, including RFA's Open Technology Fund, the State Department, USAID, and DARPA's Safer Warfighter Communications Program. IAC is also reaching out to other groups interested in Internet freedom, such as Google, Freedom House, and the National Endowment for Democracy's Center for International Media Assistance. BBG is also one of the Tor Project's biggest funders, paying out about $3.5 million from 2008 through 2013. BBG's latest publicity-known Tor contract was financed in mid-2012. The BBG gave Tor at least $1.2 million to improve security and drastically boost the bandwidth of the Tor network by funding over 100 Tor nodes across the world, all part of the U.S. government's effort to find an effective, soft power weapon that can undermine internet censorship and control in countries hostile to U.S. interests. This, again, is because it's key to understanding how Radio Free Europe and radio propaganda outfits evolved into this. The BBG gave Tor at least $1.2 million to improve security and drastically boost the bandwidth of the Tor network by funding over 100 Tor nodes across the world, all part of the U.S. government's effort to find an effective, soft power weapon that can undermine internet censorship and control in countries hostile to U.S. interests. We only know about the BBG's lucrative funding of Tor thanks to the dogged efforts of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, which had to sue to get its FOIA requests fulfilled. As mentioned, last year Congress decided the BBG was doing such a good job advancing America's interests abroad that it boosted the agency's Internet Freedom annual budget from just $1.6 million in 2011 to a whopping $25 million this year. The BBG funneled half of this taxpayer money through its Radio Free Asia subsidiary into the Open Technology Fund, the quote, nonprofit, unquote, responsible for bankrolling many of today's popular open source privacy and encryption apps. Which brings me to the next starring agency in this recovered history of Washington, D.C.'s private technology investments, Radio Free Asia. The CIA launched Radio Free Asia in 1951 as an extension of its global anti-communist propaganda radio network. RFA beamed its signal into mainland China from a transmitter in Manila, and its operations were based on the earlier Radio Free Europe Radio Liberation from Bolshevism model. The CIA quickly discovered that their plan to foment political unrest in China had one major flaw. The Chinese were too poor to own radios. Balloons holding small radios tuned to Radio Free Asia's frequency were lofted toward the mainland from the island of Taiwan, where the Chinese nationalists had fled after the communist takeover of the mainland in 1949. The plan was abandoned when the balloons were blown back to Taiwan across the Straits of Formosa. The CIA supposedly shuttered Radio Free Asia in the mid-1950s, but, quote, another, unquote, Radio Free Asia appeared a decade later, this time funded through a CIA Mooney outfit called the Korean Culture and Freedom Foundation, or KCFF, a group based in Washington, D.C., that was run by a top figure in South Korea's state intelligence agency, Colonel Bo Hee-pak, who also served as the principal evangelist of cult leader Reverend Sun Myung-moon of the Unification Church. Radio Free Asia got busted in a widespread corruption scandal in the late 1970s when the South Korean government was investigated for using the Mooney cult to influence U.S. public opinion in order to keep the U.S. military engaged against North Korea. Back in the 1970s, the Moonies were the most notorious cult in the U.S., accused of abducting and brainwashing countless American youths. How it was that the CIA's Radio Free Asia was handed off to the Moonies was never quite explained, but given laws banning the CIA or KCIA from engaging in psychological warfare in the U.S., the obvious thing to do was to bury Radio Free Asia long enough for everyone to forget about it.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
No sooner had Radio Free Asia vanished amid scandal than it reappeared yet again Terminator-like in the 1990s, this time as a legit, quote, independent, unquote, nonprofit, wholly controlled by the BBG and funded by Congress. Although this latest version of Radio Free Asia was supposed to be a completely new organization and was no longer as covert and B-movie spooky, its objectives and tactics remained exactly the same. To this day, it beams propaganda into the same communist countries, including North Korea, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, China, and Burma, and fiddles around in the same sorts of spooky adventures. Which brings us up to the present when the Broadcasting Board of Governors, Radio Free Asia, and its offshoot, the Open Technology Fund, find themselves in bed with many of the same privacy activist figures whom the public regards as the primary adversaries of outfits like Radio Free Asia and the BBG. And it's technology that brings together these supposed adversaries, the U.S. national security state on the one hand, and, quote, hacktivist, unquote, quote, anti-government, unquote, libertarian privacy activists on the other. I'm proud to be a volunteer OTF advisor, declared Corey Doctorow, editor of Boeing Boeing, and a well-known libertarian anti-surveillance activist and author. Happy to have joined the Open Technology Fund's new advisory council, tweeted Jillian York, the Director for International Freedom of Expression at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. York recently admitted that the OTF's Internet Freedom, unquote, agenda is, at its core, about regime change, but bizarrely argued that it didn't matter. In 2012, just a few months after Radio Free Asia's 24/7 propaganda blitz into North Korea failed to trigger regime change, RFA sent folks from the Tor Project, including core developer Jacob Applebaum, into Burma, just as the military dictatorship was finally agreeing to hand political power over to U.S.-backed pro-democracy politicians. The stated purpose of Applebaum's RFA-funded expedition was to probe Burma's internet system from within and collect information on its telecommunications infrastructure, which was then used to compile a report for Western politicians and international investors, unquote, interested in penetrating Burma's recently opened markets. Here you can see Applebaum's visa. It's in the original article, which is linked here. Bear in mind that it was Jacob Applebaum who appears to have engineered Edward Snowden's junket from Hawaii to Hong Kong, okay, which happened just as President Obama was going to meet with President Xi of China. Again, it's something the whole Snowden op is just that. It reeks, absolutely reeks of an intelligence operation. Continuing. Burma is a curious place for American anti-surveillance activists funded by Radio Free Asia to travel to, considering that it has long been a target of U.S. regime change campaigns. In fact, the guru of pro-Western, quote, color revolutions, unquote, Gene Sharp, wrote his famous guide to nonviolent revolutions from dictatorship to democracy, unquote, initially as a guide for Burma's opposition movement in order to help it overthrow the military junta in the late 1980s. Sharp had crossed into Burma illegally to train opposition activists there, all under the protection and sponsorship of the U.S. government and one Colonel Robert Helvey, H-E-L-V-E-Y, a military intelligence officer. Jacob Applebaum's willingness to work directly for an old CIA cutout like Radio Free Asia in a nation long targeted for regime change is certainly odd, to say the least, particularly since Applebaum made a big public show recently claiming that, though it pains him that Tor takes so much money from the U.S. military, he would never take money from something as evil as the CIA. Ignorance is bliss, and that's, I don't think he's ignorant at all. Applebaum's financial relationships with various CIA spinoffs like Radio Free Asia and the BBG go further. From 2012 to 2013, Radio Free Asia transferred about $1.1 million to Tor in the form of grants and contracts. This $1 million comes on top of another $3.4 million Tor received from Radio Free Asia's parent agency, the BBG, starting in 2007. But Tor and Applebaum are not the only ones to take money from the BBG / RFA. Take computer researcher privacy activist Harry Halpin, for example. Back in November of 2014, Halpin smeared me as a conspiracy theorist and then falsely accused me and Pando of being funded by the CIA simply because I reported on Tor's government funding. Turns out that Halpin's next-generation secure communications outfit called LEAP, in all in caps, took more than $1 million from Radio Free Asia's Open Technology Fund. Somewhat ironically, LEAP's technology powers the VPN services of RiseUp.net, the radical anarchist tech collective that provides activists with email and secure communications tools and forces you to sign a thinly veiled anti-communist pledge before giving you an account. Then there's the ACLU's Christopher Segoyan. A few months ago, he had viciously attacked me and Pando Bailey for reporting on Tor's U.S. government funding. But just the other day, Segoyan went on Democracy Now! And in the middle of a segment criticizing the U.S. government's runaway hacking and surveillance programs, recommended that people use a suite of encrypted text and voice apps funded by the very same intelligence-connected U.S. government apparatus that he was denouncing. Specifically, Segoyan recommended apps made by Open Whisper Systems, which got $1.35 million from Radio Free Asia's Open Technology Fund from 2013 to 2014. And I'm going to skip ahead. There is an excerpt of his dialogue with Amy Goodman on Democracy Now!, which basically indicates that he was aware of Radio Free Asia and Open Technology Fund's involvement with these various systems. Skipping down and concluding, you'd think that anti-surveillance activists like Chris Segoyan, Jacob Applebaum, Cory Doctorow, and Gillian York would be staunchly against outfits like BBG and Radio Free Asia and the role they have played and continue to play in working with defense and corporate interests to project and impose U.S. power abroad. Instead, these radical activists have knowingly joined the club and, in doing so, have become willing pitchmen for a wing of the very same U.S. national security state that they so adamantly oppose, or that should be in quotes. Again, you'd think that anti-surveillance activists like Chris Segoyan, Jacob Applebaum, Cory Doctorow, and Gillian York would be staunchly against outfits like BBG and Radio Free Asia and the role they have played and continue to play in working with defense and corporate interests to project and impose U.S. power abroad. Instead, these radical activists have knowingly joined the club and, in doing so, have become willing pitchmen for a wing of the very same U.S. national security state that they so adamantly oppose. I would suggest that that should be evaluated against the background of the focal point networks that were set up by Colonel L. Fletcher, probably, in which no doubt have evolved from that point forward. Again, in the upcoming program, in a week or two or three, we're going to begin an examination of the rotten to the core Apple ISIS phone, as I call it, controversy. One of the things to note is that Apple is only one, its iPhones are only one of the focal points of this dynamic. The WhatsApp encryption that is used by Facebook is one of the others. New York Times of March 12th of 2016, an article by Matt Apuzzo, APUZZO, and we will go into this at greater length when we take up the Apple situation. But note, this is the WhatsApp, WHATS, capital APP, app for Facebook. WhatsApp encryption said to stymie wiretap order by Matt Apuzzo. While the Justice Department wages a public fight with Apple over access to a locked iPhone, government officials are privately debating how to resolve a prolonged standoff with another technology company, WhatsApp, over access to its popular instant messaging application, officials and others involved in the case said. No decision has been made, but the court fight with WhatsApp, the world's largest mobile messaging service, would open a new front in the Obama administration's dispute with Silicon Valley over encryption, security, and privacy. Skipping down. In a twist, there's no way I can avoid just dripping with irony here. In a twist, the government helped develop the technology behind WhatsApp encryption. To promote civil rights in countries with repressive governments, the Open Technology Fund, that's the spin-off from Radio Free Asia that we were looking at in the Broadcasting Board of Governors, to promote civil rights in countries with repressive governments, the Open Technology Fund, which promotes open societies by supporting technology that allows people to communicate without fear of surveillance, provided $2.2 million to help develop open whisper systems, the encryption backbone behind WhatsApp. Skipping down. Those who support digital privacy fear that if the Justice Department succeeds in forcing Apple to help break into the iPhone in the San Bernardino case, the government's next move will be to force companies like WhatsApp to rewrite their software to remove encryption from the accounts of certain customers. That would be like going to nuclear war with Silicon Valley, unquote, said Chris Segoyan, a technology analyst with the American Civil Liberties Union, and parenthetically, just like Open Technology Fund, part of the very same milieu that we have just been examining, and it is basically evolved from the CIA. And of the San Bernardino case and the FBI, something we'll take up at greater length in the future, from The Hill of March 9th of 2016, article by Corey Bennett, B-E-N-N-E-T-T, and Julian Hattem, H-A-T-T-E-M as in Mary. Comey's FBI makes waves. The aggressive posture of the FBI under Director James Comey is becoming a political problem for the White House. The FBI's demand that Apple help unlock an iPhone used by one of the San Bernardino killers has outraged Silicon Valley, a significant source of political support for President Obama and Democrats. Comey, meanwhile, has stirred tensions by linking violent rising crime rates to the Black Lives Matter movement's focus on police violence and by warning about gaps, unquote, in the screening process for Syrian refugees. Then there's the biggest issue of all, the FBI's investigation into the private email server used by Hillary Clinton, Obama's former Secretary of State, and the leading contender to win the Democratic presidential nomination. Skipping down. In these cases and more, Comey, a Republican who donated in 2012 to Mitt Romney, has proved he is, quote, not attached to the strings of the White House, unquote, said Ron Hosko, the former head of the FBI's Criminal Investigative Division and a critic of Obama's law enforcement standoff. Well, that's all we have time for today, boys and girls. Be sure to tune in for the next exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie's not like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. This concludes For the Record program number 895. The CIA and the, quote, privacy, unquote, advocates. Update on the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook being recorded on March 16th of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.